Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Plate tectonics. It is accepted for geology not only on planet Earth, but looking to the heavens, to our solar system and beyond the exoplanets, that planets move. The surfaces of planets, the cores of planets move. Once upon a time, that was controversial. I was a very young man. It was the fall of 1966 at Princeton University in the Department of Geology. A course was Geology 101, which in the locker room for freshman football, I was told to call rocks for jocks. I was there, not sure what was happening around me, but there was a wonderful museum, part of the geology building at Princeton, which resembled, I think, a Victorian museum and had samples everywhere. Now I learn many decades later that I was at the crossroads of geology coming to understand how our planet is shaped, how our North America, our South America, Asia, and that we're continuing to move. So that 250 million years ago, we looked like this. 250 million years from now, we'll look like that. And to help me understand what I didn't understand in 1966, I welcome Larry Cathles. He is my guide here, writing most recently an obituary for a professor of Princeton University, Professor Jason Morgan, who's left us. Larry is the man to do it, of course, because he's Princeton 65 and understands the campus life very well, why rocks for jocks would show up in a revolutionary period. Larry was is professor emeritus at the Department of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences, Cornell University, Ithaca, New York. Professor, a very good evening to you. The continental drift that I came to not understand in 1966, it didn't much exist except for as a controversy, plate tectonics, more formally known. And you have written a wonderful obituary, a magical obituary of the late Jason Morgan. Who was Jason Morgan? What did he advance at a meeting in Washington, I believe, in 1967, that leads us to today, understanding our planet? Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening, John. Thanks very much for allowing me to be on your program and tell a little bit about this, very interesting period. Of course, I was new to it all as well. I was a perfectly happy physics major. I thought I'd go to law school. I realized law school wasn't quite what a physics major might imagine it being. And I'd done a thesis with Bob Dickey, who was also Jason Morgan's supervisor. And he directed me to go down to Princeton again and join the department. And so I was there in this period, both as an undergraduate a little bit, but not in geology. And then in geology is a lot of really interesting things were happening. Jason was a bright young person from Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, Savannah, Georgia, sorry, Savannah, Georgia. His father had died when he was relatively young, but the Morgans had a hardware store that was apparently quite an extensive hardware store, renting equipment and doing mechanical things and whatnot. And Jason was to go off to university and learn mechanical engineering and then come back and help them with the hardware store. So he went off to Georgia Tech, and he fell in love with physics. And he didn't do mechanical. He switched out of mechanical engineering. He went into physics. And then when he finished up with that, he did his military service in Connecticut, where you live now, at the Naval. I wrote it down here someplace. I can't remember it offhand.
The Naval Nuclear Power School in New London, Connecticut.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly right. And he was teaching nuclear physics, but he also got did a little bit of teaching in both there, I think, and when he came back to Princeton on navigation. And it was there that he had his horizons widened a little more. And he learned that there was such a thing as graduate school. And he decided he'd apply to do relativity physics with Bob Dickey in the physics department at Princeton. Now, I've learned all of this a little bit later, as you might imagine. I had no idea that all this was going on at the time. But Dickey had been talking a lot with Harry Hess, who was chairman of the department and geology department, and was very interested in the possibility that the gravitational constant, big G, was changing with time. And if that were true, the Earth would be blowing up like a balloon, and the continents might split apart, and, you know, what was realized in the early days of ocean exploration, you know, who am I fishing for? Sir Francis Bacon. You know, when they started making maps, they realized that Africa fit into South America. So the idea was that if G was changing, well, maybe the Earth was just blowing up like a balloon, and that would explain the fit. And that would be a way to prove that the gravitational constant was changing. So Jason got involved in looking for gravity waves. And the geologic information that he was studying as a physicist were earthquakes. And I guess the idea was that if a gravity wave came along, you might have a burst of earthquakes or something, and you might be able to get a handle on it that way. I got involved. Dickey was also interested in the rotation of the sun. And I got into geologically related things a little bit with trying to do some calculations, carry out the calculations for them in terms of how the change in gravitational constant might affect the oblateness of the sun, the peripheral bulge of the sun. So anyway, when Jason finished his thesis, Dickey thought, and he gave the same advice to me. I was an undergrad. He was my undergraduate advisor, Dickey was, and he was Jason's graduate advisor. He gave us both the same advice. He said, you know, physics is too, you know, the projects are too big. It's too bureaucratic. Geophysics is really the interesting area. You might think about getting into that. And so Jason went down to the geology department and joined them as a postdoc. And then in 1966, he was appointed a assistant professor. Now, let's see. So there were these ideas that the Earth might be expanding. Wegener had shown that if continents drifted about, an awful lot of geology made great sense, that the dinosaurs could walk across between various continents if they were together, and they'd have a lot of trouble if there were an ocean in between. And there were the geology fit, and we knew that the Earth was fluid because we had glacial rebound in places like Norway and Sweden, where the land was uplifting. And Wegener made a very nice story about continental drift, continents drifting about and colliding and then spreading apart again and whatnot. But that had fallen into tremendous disfavor because the physicists, Sir Harold Jeffreys and people like that, had shown that it was physically impossible for continents to plow through solid rock. So continental drift was challenged. The idea of expanding Earth was one possibility of getting around that. And Jason was schooled in two things. He told me that the hardest thing he ever had to do was figure out poles of rotation on a sphere. And he did that in high school in Georgia. And because it was so hard, he never forgot it. And he wound up in a sharing an office with Fred Vine. And this is a long, complicated story. I'm sorry, John. Maybe I'm getting too complicated here. But
no, we're right at the frontier of the breakthrough. Go right ahead, Professor.
Yeah. Okay. So Harry Hess put these guys together. Hess did two things. He hired all the graduate students. He made all those decisions. And he allotted all the space. And he'd gotten Jason Morgan to come down to Princeton. And he got Fred Vine to come to Princeton from England. And he made them share an office. And Morgan was a physicist that knew what to do with various things and how to calculate things. And Vine had shown that in the ocean, there were magnetic stripes around the ridges. And then the idea was that as the oceans opened up, the Earth's magnetic field was frozen in to the cooling lavas. And furthermore, the magnetic field flipped every once in a while. So the North Pole was the South Pole, and the compass would point south rather than north. And this happened irregularly from a few hundred thousand years to a few million years. So that, and then there was a publication, the Journal of Geophysical Research, that everybody got. And Menard out in California had drawn a map that showed in the middle of the ridge, in the middle of the oceans, there were these faults that were curved on his projections. So Morgan knew how to do poles of rotation. He looked at this map of Menard's and realized that those fractures were small circles of rotation. And he realized that Africa and South America were moving apart and could be described very efficiently by poles of rotation. So the idea is that you have it's like a pencil, and you poke it into the earth, and then you rotate around the pencil one continent relative to another. And so you've got the pencil where you stick it, and that describes how the plates are opening, where at the pencil it's just rotating, and at the equator the plates are moving apart very fast. And you've got the rate of opening. And Morgan looked at this data and just saw that right away, more or less, because he knew about.
He saw before he wrote it down. This becomes the paper for.
He just realized he said he looked at these maps and he knew instantly that was a pole of rotation.
All right. We're going to go to the presentation for the paper is entitled Rises, Trenches, Great Faults and Crustal Blocks, 1967. I'm speaking to Professor Cathles. He has written the obituary for Jason Morgan, but we're talking about a breakthrough that changed everything, our understanding of our planet. When we come back, what does it mean once it was proposed in 1967? What does it mean that people were reluctant to accept it? It's very accepted today. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699. Our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.